Now, the 27th, is that?
27th.
25th of December.
Okay, it's that time. It's true, it's true. Okay. Just a reminder that next week we don't have a class. And so the following week, on the 27th, we will have a class.
Oh, where am I going to do next month?
Well, now that you mention it, at night, at 7 o'clock, I'm doing a review of A Horse Walked Into a Bar. Yeah, if you can come, great, Monday night, the 20th.
A review of every.
The book by David Grossman called A Horse Walks Into a Bar. Yeah, it won the Man Booker International Prize, and it is, I mean, it's a brilliant, genius book.
If we haven't read it, is it okay?
Yeah, it'd be better if you do, but yeah.
Ruth is a very fast read.
Oh, okay, do you have a copy of it?
Oh, no, I got it from the library.
Oh, really?
I'm on reserve at the library.
But she was very intrigued.
I'm on reserve at the library.
All right.
Okay, that's right, nurse.
So that's next Monday night, and you want it there or here, either one.
Well, look who's here.
So, okay. So that's next Monday night. Too far? Oh, okay, so from here, okay. Okay, yeah.
Your dad's coming to work.
It's fine. Okay, so homeschooling. Homeschooling. So what is homeschooling? What is homeschooling? Well, let's go with the traditional homeschooling. What is,
It is a curriculum that's been approved that's taught to children at home.
Right, okay, so, right, so, and many people do this now, where they decide for whatever reason, either the school or the area, or it's a matter of principle. For whatever reason, they decide they're going to teach their kids at home. And so this is called homeschooling, and I think it's picked up in recent years. But when she uses it, of course, it's an Edith Perlman use of it, which is, so yes, these children are homeschooled. But if I forget, we should come back to that question. What does she really mean by homeschooling? When we get to the end, let's come back to that question. Okay, so let us begin. Nauseated, dizzy, I lay on the back seat of our dusty car, my head resting against the garment bag that held, 103, sorry, that held my father's two tuxedos. Beyond my raised knees, I saw a mortar sky. Above the front seat rose my Aunt Kate's ponytailed head and shoulders, and my twin sister's head, or at least the top of her baseball cap. Willie kept fiddling with the radio and singing French songs we'd learned from our parents. Yag, I said every so often. Okay, so my father's two tuxedos. Why does he have two tuxedos?
Because he's a musician.
He's a musician. He's a concert musician, and so he would use them for playing. And now, when you read this paragraph the first time, who did you think Willie was?
Boy.
Brother.
Yeah, I was sure that it was the brother, right. And then the two twin sisters. Yeah,
right.
She pulls another fast one. Right, so feeling better, hon? And one thing that some commentator mentioned is that Edith Perlman likes twosomes. She likes, so here we have the twins. In many of the stories, we have, just this focus on two particular characters, or so Anyway, so we're going to have our twosome here.
The other thing, I don't usually notice stuff like this, but the word fiddling, she lets us know that he's a fiddler.
Yes. Okay, yeah, and what's with the, Harry? What's the problem? She's a specialist in car sickness, right?
Yes. Yeah.
She has motion sickness. What is that? Beyond my raised knees, I saw a mortar sky.
That stuck with me. I couldn't figure out what that
gray
was.
Is it
a light in the sky?
Gray color.
Yeah, gray no, color. I think it's the color gray, like, you know.
Like a mortar and pestle.
Like clay.
I read somewhere like a mortar goes off, that there's like this light in the sky.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. That's no, I think here it's gray.
Yeah.
And it's just gray because that's the situation. Yeah. You know, that's the situation that they're in.
She also gives you an idea of how old these people are by talking about the ponytail and the baseball caps. You get a feeling of the generations by the time you're through with the first paragraph, about how old, and before they say she stopped her master's.
And right. What else, what other information has she given us, just in the first paragraph?
Well, her father stuff's in the car, but her father's not in the car.
Okay, so, right, so the stuff is in the car, but we will learn that the father and the mother had flown ahead, right? And we're singing French songs we'd learned from our parents. Mm-hmm. So already, you know, they're singing French songs that they've learned from their parents. So it tells you at least a little bit of how their parents are educating them or what the culture of the family is a little bit when you teach your kids songs in another language. And she says,
also telling you that he might be a concert pianist and might travel.
Right. So she's on her knees and trying to get a hold of the car sickness. Feeling better, hun? Said Aunt Kate, not taking her eyes off the road. Yesterday, the day we'd left home, she'd quit her graduate program in classics, chucked those Romans as if they were all losers. Feeling the same? Feeling worse. Okay, what do we learn about Aunt Kate?
She's there.
So she's driving the girls, and she quit her classics program.
She's leaving her life so close to her sister.
Her brother, it's her brother.
Brother.
Right. But and we don't know it, of course, until later. The one thing that we do know about her is she doesn't take her eyes off the road when she's driving. So she's a person who really owns responsibility for what she does and for the people that she loves. But that is a little jarring with throwing the classics out the window, right? Until we know why she did it.
Yeah. And she's making the Romans into the losers, not the family into the losers. She's saying, you're the winners.
Right.
They're the losers.
Right, right.
I also, when I think about the classics, I think about Greek. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For her to say the Romans,
right.
I don't know if that goes back to the education that they have or don't have, homeschooling, et cetera, but it just seemed dissonant for her to say the Romans instead of the Greeks. The Greek classic.
Yeah, or the Greeks. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, skip to the next page, 104. Willie gazed at us from the car. It might be better if you did throw up, she said, not unkindly. Car sickness is your specialty. Vomiting is not my specialty, I reminded her, though I spoke into my skirt and probably couldn't be heard. I can still remember that ugly plaid turquoise and peach. At the time we were 10, I thought it gorgeous. Okay, so, and the relationship between the sisters?
Caring.
Yeah, not unkindly, right? They're a set of twins who can talk to each other not unkindly, especially when you say car sickness is your specialty. You know, that could be not such a great thing to say. But she just responds, and we know that this is a reminiscence, right? This is a remembering back. They're already back in their their home place before they go for the treatment. My car sickness, Madeline, do you want to?
Sure. My car sickness had something to do with my inner ear, our pediatrician told us. I had an atypical vestibular canal. Willie's vestibular canal was less atypical, the doctor tactfully said when pressed. More normal. Better. But he didn't say those things. Who cared? I had a more atypical memory than Willie. That is, she remembered not a lot, and I remembered almost everything.
Right. So listen, in her mind, right, in Harry's mind, Harriet's mind, she remembered not a lot. Not she's an idiot, she can't remember anything, but she has. Now, the word that's repeated three times in this paragraph,
atypical.
And it's going to come again and in other forms, right? We hear not usual and atypical again. And so, you know, it's one of those blinking lights. We're in something unusual. Okay. Yeah.
Otherwise, we were pretty similar in aptitudes and tastes, although we didn't look alike. I am dark and she is fair. I have a blunt, short nose, and she has a long, thin one. In those days, we both wore braids. I didn't throw up, not once in the 3-day journey to Boston. My father had thrown up at the beginning of his illness, when the headaches began. He was already in our new home while we were driving, and I was not throwing up. Our new home was a rented flat in a 3-decker section of the city. My parents had flown ahead with 2 suitcases and my father's violin.
Right, so 3-deckers, we know we're in Godolphin, and we know where in Godolphin we are. So in this paragraph, we have throwing up and we have throwing up. Right? There's a difference between them, a qualitative difference. And one is just, you know, something that some of us have to bear when we're in cars, and the other is life-threatening. And now we hear about my father's violin. So we understand, why his tuxedos. So it comes. Okay. Jenny, do you want to keep going when not in the hospital?
When not in the hospital for treatments, my father slept in the front bedroom with my mother. A congregation of mahogany furniture kept him company. On the high boy stood a stag line of Dad's medications. Mom's perfume bottles flared their hips at the pills.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. That's so wonderful.
Yeah. A congregation of mahogany furniture kept them company. So what has she managed to do with these wonderfully crafted lines?
Make humor out of it.
Right. So, yes. So,
lightness and humor.
Yes. It lightens things up. Mm-hmm. And what she does in each of the three lines, a congregation kept them company. On the high boy stood a stag line, and the bottles flared their hips. She's animating them, right? They're all like personified, and so there's a lot of life, even with the furniture and the medication. You know, this place is a place that's full of life, and flared their hips at the pills. That's really so great. But you can see, you could see if they animated this, what it would look like, right? You know, you have that right. Okay. Jenny, do you want to keep going?
Aunt Kate had the middle bedroom. Willie and I shared the back room. Our window looked down on an oblong of brown earth rimmed with pink geraniums, an abscess of a yard. The view horizontally at our third floor level was more encouraging. Clapboard 3-deckers like ours, their back bedrooms close enough to see into at night. These were children's rooms. We gave the children epithets. Nose picker, girls, four eyes, Amaryllis. Amaryllis was a stalk of a girl with a beautiful drooping head. She was about 13. Beyond and between these nearer houses, we could see bits of the other side of their street, more houses with front porches. And beyond that row, still another set of black windows. Like scenery, said Willie. I knew what she meant. The flat overlapping facades destroyed perspective, turned the daytime view into backdrop. At night, though, when the near windows were lit, the rooms behind them acquired depth, even intensity. Nose Picker practiced his perversion. Curls read magazines on her bed. Amaryllis smiled into the telephone.
Okay, so what do we what do we learn about Harry and Willie?
They're engaged in their surroundings.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're engaged in their surroundings. And remember that we've had this a couple of times where somebody's looking into somebody else's windows, or somebody is looking down from the window. You know, the Harry and Willie are acute observers. They don't, nothing gets past them. Even when they're not showing off their knowledge, they know every single thing that's happening, because kids always do. But they also can finish, they know what each other means. When she says like scenery, I wouldn't have known what that meant, but her sister does, because they have that much in common. The flat destroyed perspective, turned the daytime into backdrop.
She's also having a great time with language. She's really having fun.
I know.
Although actually, I think it bothers me, and it started from, I think, the mortar sky, that I don't care how advanced this kid is, she's not talking like a 10-year-old. I really think she's...
Remember that it's a reminiscence.
Okay.
It's a flashback.
All right. That makes.
You wouldn't say epithets. No.
I mean, a lot of this stuff,
right,
she wouldn't say.
Right. So she's doing two at the same time. So she told us that she's looking back, right? At the time we were 10, I thought it gorgeous. Mm-hmm. So we don't know how old she is now. Mm-hmm. But she was 10 then. But epithets tells us that she's, you know, and some of the other vocabulary tells us that she's, you know, beyond 10.
But calling somebody Amaryllis at 10 years old shows a sophistication.
Right.
Yeah.
Knowledge of all kinds of things.
Right, right. The names themselves, yeah. Right, mm-hmm. Right. So she knew Amaryllis. Right, so they're looking into other people's apartments. Now, they're not taking a telescope, they're just using their eyes. This is not like, you know, the peeping whatever, but they're not, you know, bothering not to look into them. They're, you know, they're interested in what's going on there.
The picture that she draws, the thing that got me was the oblong of brown earth with pink drain and abscess. And I mean, who thinks of that? But when you think about an abscess right around the, and it also is sort of a commentary on, this is a yard.
Right. So what does she mean by an abscess of a yard?
Well, to me, the visual is if you have an abscess, I mean, physically, you know, it's like dark, but there's red inflammation around it. And so I think she's describing what an abscess is, but then the commentary of what the heck,
and
this is a yard.
Abscess is an opening, right? Isn't it? So it's this little piece of earth that's open around what I'm taking to be cement and more of a, I was thinking more of an inner city kind of environment.
Right, but you do think of things oozing from it, and you know, so it's, to say something's an abscess of a yard is to say it's like,
I just thought it was ugly.
Ugly.
And
yes.
It's a place you don't want to go.
Right.
I mean, so they didn't go outside to play in the yard.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
So
it's like that. The houses are very close to each other, and the other kids just keep their shades up, and they don't care if anybody looks in.
Right. So also, you know, this is a story about illness. You know, an abscess of a yard. So, you know, she kind of sprinkles those little things to kind of keep us in our consciousness that we're dealing with a serious illness. But then we get it again, the abscess of the yard followed by the black-bellied hibachis. So we know there, at least I know what she's talking about, right? The black-bellied hibachis. Harry, do you want to?
On some of the porches, it was the era of hibachi. It was the era of consciousness raising. The previous year, our third grade had been told that women could be anything they wanted to be. We were puzzled by this triumphant disclosure. Nobody at home had hinted otherwise.
Right.
It was the year of war protests and assassinations. Hubert Humphrey kissed his own face on a hotel's TV screen. There were breakthroughs in cancer therapy.
Mm-hmm. So we get the time frame, right? Nobody at home had hinted otherwise. So this was the time that things like this were happening. But given where we are in 2017, you know how unusual that is, right? If we know how far we have not come in 2017, this is very unusual. Nobody at home had hinted otherwise, right? Right. There were breakthroughs. So there were breakthroughs in cancer therapy, right? So maybe there's some hope here. This is, you know, maybe this is a journey that's going to be of hope. Okay. Except we know, yeah. Okay, so do you want to keep going here?
Sure. Whenever my father went into the hospital for his treatments, he had to share a room with some other patient, sometimes an old man, sometimes a young one. They too were recovering from surgery and receiving therapy. My father wore a turban, entirely white though, with no central jewel. He and Aunt Kate, siblings but not twins, resembled each other more than Willie and I did. Mm-hmm. The same silky red hair, the same soft brown eyes. His eyes were dull now, and his hair had vanished into his sultan's headgear.
So the sultan's headgear, or the without the central jewel. What's
bandage?
It's a bandage.
Yeah, or you know, or something or to cover. You know, they lost their hair, and so you know, so there's a covering. And his hair had vanished into his sultan's headgear. So it's gone. Skip down a little bit. We owned no appliances. Mom, do you want to read? It's the five lines down in the middle. We owned no appliances. Mom, do you want to read?
Yeah. We owned no appliances, a fortunate deprivation, for the kitchen had no counter. We kept crockery and utensils in a freestanding cupboard, drawers below, shelves above. Our canned goods marshaled themselves on a ledge above an acre enameled stove. The enamel had worn off the stove in some places. It looked like a hide of a sick beast. Kate and Mom said that the atypically patterned stove was a period piece, a survivor. They seem to feel a pet owner's affection.
Right. So we have the atypical here. What about we own no appliances, a fortunate deprivation for the kitchen with no counters? That's a way of looking at life, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That's a way of looking at life. It's a way of looking at the world. A fortunate deprivation. For the kitchen. But they're unusual. They look at life with the glass half full. The cans marshal themselves, you know? So we have a, and what's that about? So we're also doing battle here, right? We're doing battle.
Don't you think that it's like a stream of consciousness about his father, her father.
Right.
Having cancer, I'm assuming.
Yes.
And it goes all through the story.
Yes, yes. We're in her mind the whole time. Yes, mm-hmm. right. Okay, skip down to the, to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, six lines from the bottom, the last word, during breakfast. Lynn, do you wanna?
During breakfast, the thing would seem to square its shoulders against an onslaught.
Talking about the teletype, right?
The message would begin to type out. Paper rose jerkily from the platen. Sometimes what scrawled into our kitchen was a copy of the program my mother was working on, with its three-letter instructions and fanciful addresses. Talk feeble, deployable.
Here again, another military, you know, square its shoulders against the onslaught. How many of you knew what a platen or platen was?
Yeah,
You know? Okay. What?
Still don't.
Still don't. So it's the cylinder in the typewriter that you put the paper on? Right. So she's very, Edith Perlman is terrific in that, you know, she makes us think about her stories. She also makes us go to the dictionary so often.
Yeah.
Right. So tack feeble, put foible, turn elsewhere. Yeah. So these computer people have a sense of humor too. fanciful addresses. Okay. Keep going, Lynn. Okay.
We knew that such a series represented the transfer first of information and then of control. We understood the octal number system and the binary number system and their eternal correspondence. Fractions and decimals, however, were still terra incognita to us. And Willie, invoking her not a to hadn't yet bothered to learn any method of long division.
Okay. So what do we learn about these two? And Willie.
That's part of their aspect of their homeschooling, that this is what they're learning at home, not in order to be a part of a curriculum, but like they're learning that girls can do anything, and singing French songs and whatever. It's part of sort of an atypical homeschooling.
An atypical, right. And octal and binary, the eternal correspondence between them. So do we have any mathematicians who'd like to explain that to us? Okay, so it's the, our number system is base 10, right? That's, and then the octal is base 8. And so the way I understand it is that it goes up to 17, like when you're counting up 17 and then you skip to 20. Does that sound right? I think that sounds right. But I don't understand how this works. But, you know, for them to understand how this works, and clearly they do, you know, they definitely have an atypical schooling, and we have the word atypical again. Now, what is that about hadn't yet bothered to learn any method of long division?
Well, she could if she wanted to, but she wasn't on the agenda.
But it also shows a resourcefulness in those who are teaching her. Because, you know, if you don't learn long division the way it's taught in the classroom, you're pretty well sunk. But if you have alternate ways of doing it, then if, you know, you have a much more robust understanding. She couldn't care less.
Right, right. And so, and when she does care because she's going to go back to a regular classroom, it won't be a problem for her to learn it.
Right.
It's just, you know, she just hadn't bothered. You know, that's it. Dale, do you want to keep going at breakfast?
At breakfast, Mom and Kate wore flowered wrappers trimmed with lace. They loomed over their coffee as if they had all the daylight hours to kill. Early in the fall, when Dad was home more often, when he was still getting up for breakfast, he told them they looked like demi-modanes and that Willie and I looked like semi-modanes. And then we were his harem and the teletype his unit.
That's so fabulous.
Yeah. So what's a demi-mundane?
It's somebody who lives in a world that's very hedonistic and maybe bohemian.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the it's not high society here. It's the demi-monde is you know, is just a little lower. Yes.
Yeah, they're not in their silk dressing gowns. they're in, you know, cotton with lace, flower right. Cotton with lace.
Right. Uh-huh. So the father says they're his harem, and the teletype is his eunuch, meaning what?
It's guarding them.
Yeah, so he feels like royalty, you know. He doesn't have the jewel, but he's, you know, they, and his eunuch. Yeah, so it's his kingdom, as it were, and this was when he was still getting up for breakfast, because there was the time where he wasn't getting up for breakfast anymore. Barry, did you want to say something before?
No. Okay. Well, no. I was going back in my head to the two
tuxedo. I was thinking they were still hopeful. Mm-hmm. On their way there, and you're saying he's declining, declining, mm-hmm. but on their way, they brought the tuxedo, so just in case he got better, he could perform.
Right, right. The breakthrough cancer therapy, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
When the New England winter settled in my mother,
settled in.
My mother bought oatmeal, and on those dark mornings, it bubbled on the stove. We hated oatmeal, but it was the glue of normality, the stuff that was supposed to stick to kids' ribs through a morning of math and grammar. So we spooned some into bowls and joined our mother and our aunt at the round table. They had already divided the newspaper between them. Now each divided her section with one of us. The teletype throbbed. Kate got up to pour more coffee. Her hips were as slim as a boy's. She sat down. The teletype spat. After a while, Mom got up. She bent over the machine, hair falling forward, hands splayed on lace bosom.
So they have their wrappers that have the lace. So she's holding right while she's bending over. So we really know these kids are atypical. Because why?
They're reading the newspaper at 10 years old.
They're reading the newspaper at 10. Why are they eating the oatmeal?
Because it's good for them.
Because Mom made the oatmeal, and we're having breakfast, and we're not going to make a peep that I don't like oatmeal. These are, you know, they are so grown up beyond their years. It's normal for kids to say, I don't like this, I don't like that. Wouldn't even consider it. We just spoon it in, we go sit, because what's most important to them? They want to be there. They want to be there with the family. And so if that's what it takes to be there with the family, they'll eat the hated oatmeal. And then the teletype throbs and spits and, you know, it has a life of its own. And it's sort of the background music for family life. Do you want to keep going? Yeah.
It was not usual in those days for a programmer to have a teletype installed in her home. But my mother was not a usual programmer.
Not usual.
Her mind could simulate into the circuitry of a machine. She understood its syntax and could make use of its simple doggy logic. I have a modest gift, she earnestly told us. I was just born with it, like freckles. 50 years earlier, 10 years earlier even, a person with such a faculty would have had to divert it to accounting or weaving or puzzles. My mother had been born into the right generation for her talent. In that regard, she was lucky.
Mm, right. So she says she has a modest gift. We understand that she has quite the gift, because nobody allows somebody to work with a teletype from home and a woman in that field. My mother had been born into the right generation for her talent. What a great line to describe so many other people who had not been born in the right generation for their talent. In Michael's family, my husband's family, everybody's chemists, and so my brother-in-law has a PhD in chemistry, and my father-in-law of blessed memory had a PhD in chemistry. And if my mother-in-law had been, you know, born
in the right
10, 15 years later, she too would have had a PhD in chemistry. Instead, she taught high school chemistry. But you can be sure she would have had her PhD. She was not born into the generation where she was going to be able to do that. So in that regard, she was lucky.
Did anybody here ever have a teletype machine, work with a teletype?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's my noisy.
My phone.
Right, it's noisy. But they just accept it. I just can't imagine.
It had a life of its own. It was like a robot in itself.
Yeah. I mean, I had one in my office.
Yeah.
And it was noisy.
Yeah, and it does throb and it does spin.
Yes.
Right, right. So she and we went into the office 2 days a week, often staying until midnight. 2 10-year-olds staying until midnight. Computers were hulking giants then, with lights and switches and whirring magnetic tapes. Ina, this is what your talking about a little bit. Mom's machine growled in an air-conditioned warehouse surrounded by a warren of offices with fiberboard walls and desks that were just planks on iron legs. Programmers hung snapshots and party invitations and straw hats above their desks. My mother's walls were bare, but in one corner of her office, a pair of old school chairs with armrests sat at a 30-degree angle to each other. She had picked them up in a secondhand shop near the hospital. Between the chairs stood an oversized tin bucket filled with books and games. Under it all was a small fake oriental rug. Whenever I see the word happiness, I think of that corner. So, and she tells us they're old school chairs, right? And they're at a 30-degree angle to each other. Sorry, it should be like this, right? Mm-hmm. So they're just, and in between them they have what?
Books and games.
Books and games. And they stay there all day, and they go to the sandwich machine themselves. And yet this was happiness for her. So why was it happiness?
Because they were with the mother.
Father was still alive. They're with their mother all day, every day. They're with each other all day, every day. They can learn what they want to learn all day, every day.
And the air was filled with love. I mean, this right. is the most mm-hmm. love-filled so story.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Yes, so much love, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was a small, fake oriental rug. Mm-hmm. I mean, she made the, it sounds like the reading corner in the library
yeah. mm-hmm.
that's mm-hmm. just meant to engulf mm-hmm. you and get you in.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And so the mom, we don't get too much of her personality, but what we do understand about her is she knows how to create home, right? Because it was, you know, an oriental rug and the books and the games and a couple of chairs and mom. Because what is home? What do we learn is home? What are we schooled in learning is home? Home is where the people you love are. And so, you know, so that was their home schooling, right? They're with the people that they love. It's reminding me of that amazing story we read by Edith Perlman about the father and the three sons and the mother. Oh, it was also one of these stories overflowing with love.
The mother was the nurse and they had the plant.
Yes, the plant, oh, right.
Remember?
Right.
The plant in the corner. Can't remember. Yeah. Comes yeah. into the plant.
Oh, yeah.
But it's the same thing where she never says, ever, they loved each other, mm-hmm. right? She never says that. But it's the details and the, you know, and the thoughts, the way they think about things and think about each other, that is just so moving. The different co-workers take them different places. People are kind. There are people who are kind, and people will often step in. You know, really the kindness of people who were strangers, now they know them. We brought home a pot of daffodils and a paper poppy. I will extract some paper opium from this, said our father in his weakened voice. We will have such dreams. Dreams, he suddenly shouted, right? And then what we hear later on is that they understand that that's not him speaking, that's the disease speaking. That's how amazing these kids are. So skip down to Harriet and Wilma, she said, by way of greeting. It's at the bottom of that next paragraph. Ina, do you want to read or do you want to pass?
Yeah, I'll pass.
Okay. Wendy?
Yeah, here.
All we had to do was say hello, Miss Masters, and smile and skedaddle. Harry and Willie corrected. Miss Masters slid her hands onto her lap with an awful gravity. Twins, but not identical. Fraternal sisters, said Willie. What grade are you in? Fourth, I said, at the same time Willie said, my, oh my, was the extent of Miss Masters' reply, but her tone was inquisitorial.
What a word.
She's advanced, I said. My explanation ruined it. Siding with Willie, she's retarded. Then we did skedaddle.
When we turned the corner, I grabbed Willie by her bony shoulders. Do you want to go to school? I demanded. Geez, no. Well then.
Okay, so what do we see here? About
our so close, they're answering the questions on top of each other at the same time.
Correctly, right. In other words, they have the correct answer, they just express it differently, right? So they're totally in tune with each other, right?
And Willie seems a little sarcastic and a little irreverent, you know, because she's calling her sister retarded, right? Whereas Harry is saying, well, she's advanced. She's
right. So, Miss Masters, mm-hmm. right? Because we know that school is slavery, and we know that, you know, in school is the masters, and we don't want to get anywhere near that potential, you know? So, do you want to go to school? Well, then, you know, act like it, Willie, if you really don't want to go to school. You know, so they also, you know, except for Willie's little misstep here, they understand about navigating the world of adults. Mm-hmm. You know, they understand, and they want to keep their situation as it is. Skip down like four lines. We settled down on our chairs with sandwiches. Wendy, do you want to keep going?
Where are we?
After the well, then, just like four lines down.
We settled down on our chairs with sandwiches and books, our presence unacknowledged. We understood that absorption, not indifference, made her ignore us, just as we understood that our father's sudden explosions were disease, not rage. My mother's pencil scratched. We read and chewed. She began to hum, a sign that she had solved a problem. She straightened and moved her chair outward, and it protested faintly. I looked up and began to sing the words to the tune my mother was humming. The song was Good Morning from the movie Singing in the Rain. I'd seen it twice in the revival house back home and once on somebody's television. Willie joined in a third higher. We sang the words, and Mom abandoned the melody and hummed continual. The wrestling programmer walked in with a flow diagram, stopped to listen to this makeshift serenade.
Yeah, so they're a family that sings together, and it also speaks again to the education that the kids are getting. So when we didn't go to work with Mom, we went to work with Kate. So, but we had also... after we had finished the house cleaning and had made a trip to the library and the Civil War Monument and maybe listened to the organist practice in the little brick church. So they have music and history and, you know, and we're going to see cooking and art. They have an amazing, multifaceted education going on.
And
there.
No television.
And no television, right, no screens, right, right. Then they go on their walk into the diner. I'm on the right side of 111. We saw the children of the neighborhood engaged in their various childish activities, right? Their childish activities, because these are, I mean, they're the age is a child, but they don't behave like children. They knew that the mother was not ignoring them. You know, what do children want? They want attention. But these kids understood. No, it's not that she's not paying attention to us. She's absorbed. It's not that he's yelling at us. He's, you know, it's the disease. Okay, skip down to the bottom of the page. Because of our delicate health, we are tutored at home, suggested Willie. By our aged relative, I added, Aunt Kate grinned. You know, so they're all completely on the same page. So turn to 112. How many of you knew what out of stir meant? Top line, out of stir, when father was out of stir? Out of jail, right. I didn't, well, you guys are ahead of me. Okay, out of prison, right. Okay, so the middle of the page. Some mornings, Kate visited my father while my mother stayed home with us and the eunuch. We didn't resent not being left on our own. We knew that our competence was not in question. just as we knew that it was not hatred of men that caused Aunt Kate to snub the blameless advances made by some of the Busy Bee's patrons, and to keep Milo at arm's length too, and that it was not Willie's skinniness that prompted Mom to lay her cheek against my sister's some wintry mornings in the living room, and it was not my tendency to vertigo that made her embrace me suddenly in the kitchen. And although Willie and I liked to check on what the neighbors were up to, it was not to watch Amaryllis brushing her hair that we perfected our spying techniques. It was to watch the two semi-mundane. We saw the glances they exchanged in the beginning of that year, and then we sensed glances without seeing them, and eventually we sensed glances they didn't even need to exchange. So what's happening in this paragraph? She's showing us all the ways that certain things could be misinterpreted, right? We've had a couple of stories where she's telling us over and over, things are not what they seem. Mm-hmm. Don't judge. And so here she's telling us all of the correct interpretations. We knew that, you know, she's not questioning our competence, but it could look like that. Or, you know, we're not spying. We didn't care about Amaryllis. We cared about my mother and Aunt Kate and what was going on and, you know, what they were telling us and what was happening and so on. It might have looked a certain way, but it wasn't. Okay, so 113 at the bottom, we're now in the rehab center. Mm-hmm. I think he guessed what was coming, the tumor's steady growth, the blindness in the right eye, the new operation's failure. So we have the rest of his disease here, right? We have the progression and, right. Along the polished linoleum, the sick man marched, whispering into his wife's ear, her hair separated, revealing her meek nape. We trailed behind. So, you know, there's a beautiful relationship here between husband and wife. You know, they're talking till the end, and they're not stopping walking because they're afraid if they stop walking that he will stop living. It's, you know, this David Grossman book called To the End of the Land. I haven't read it, but the conceit is that the mother, if she keeps walking on this trail, the army won't be able to tell her that something's happened to the son, right? So they're going to keep walking, top of 114. They were going to share supper in the cafeteria, they said. It was always nutritionally appropriate. Bilious, Dad confided. Maybe the two of you would like to go out for pizza. But they didn't. They wanted to stay, right? If we stayed, we could watch her eat, watch him pretend to eat ourselves. See? Good children. Swallowing the meatloaf, the stewed fruit. But Willie began. Have fun, said my mother. Okay. So they were being sent to have pizza. They would have preferred to stay, even though it's stew and, you know, stewed fruit and meatloaf compared to pizza. They would have preferred to stay anyway, because they want to be there. 115 on the other side. So Amaryllis was just another Jennifer. So here we see that even though they're not interacting with children, they are experts. They're not just experts at navigating adults. They're experts at navigating new friends, people they don't know, but they want to interact with. So they're lying here and they're saying this, and you know, but they're having themselves a great old time because they're with the group of children. So 116, we talked about pizza toppings, we discussed television programs we'd never seen, Boys in the Neighborhood too, you know, Kevin, Nicole asked. I know who he is, I lied. Wicked. We knew that wicked meant splendid, right? And this is Boston area, right? Wicked. It's such a, right. In Worcester, they say wicked, right? I know who he is. Did we like the Stones? Harrison Ford? Had we seen the gas meter man? No one asked us what grade we were in. Did we skate? Skating was our passion. Skip down. They said, maybe we'll see you sometime here. We got it. We were known in their homes and not thought well of. Maybe their families had glimpsed the whorish dressing grounds of our mother and aunt. Perhaps they were prejudiced against men in turbans. So they, again, nothing is lost on them. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why we want to see them in the pizza place and no place else, right? They're not going to be visiting our homes and so on. Because why?
They're not like them. They're different. Kids don't go to school. The mother's got this job. You know, who knows how much the neighbors know. But the kids aren't like the other kids, for sure.
Right, right. And if you look at them, you know, you don't have the interpreter, right, to say what Harry did all that interpreting from, right? So if you just look at what's going on, you know, you might think that they're, you know, they're transient and, you know, whoever, if you want to put the best face on it, if you want to put the worst face on it, it's like they're not, you know, part of our socioeconomic, you know, milieu. But here, maybe their families glimpsed the whorish dressing gowns, right? And these were, you know, these are the dressing grounds of royalty and the harem and love and, you know, and but from the outside it can look what it looks like. Okay. Bottom of 116. Sandra, do you want to read in the late spring?
In the late spring, he came home for the last time. He couldn't eat unless you count tea. "I'd like to play a little," he said to Kate. Whenever the quartet or the symphony performed, he sat up on the stage, remote. Once, though, he had fiddled almost in our midst at the wedding of my mother's youngest brother. Standing, he played the anniversary waltz by request, borrowing an instrument from the hired trio. He was wearing his tuxedo on that occasion, and his red hair above the black and white garments gave him a hectic gaiety. My mother told us that the anniversary waltz was an old Russian tune, stolen and given words in order to fill a need in a movie musical. In our rented living room, and my father did not play the anniversary waltz, he played a few sweet things, some Mendelssohn and some Gluck, and Aunt Kate did well with the accompaniment, very well, really, since she was silently sobbing. Then he played "Isn't It Romantic," and Kate recovered and pushed through with a nice solo bit, Oscar Peterson-ish. He knew the tunes and the lyrics, and we could have hummed along. We knew the tunes and the lyrics, and we could have hummed along or even sung along, but as we sat mute on the sofa, flanking our mother, outside the street lamps illuminated the cardboard facades of the other houses. The sky was purple. My father wore a striped hospital robe over custard pajamas. His eyes closed when we reached the final note. Silence. From the kitchen, the teletype began to clatter.
So, what a scene. Oh my goodness. I'd like to play a little. And so we're going to play. If you want to play, we're going to play. Even though, you know, and then the final note. So he unfortunately dies from his disease.
And the teletype begins to clatter as life moves on.
Right. And now we're back home. Gail?
No dependent clauses, said the principal back home in August. No middle ages, she was muttering, but in a kindly fashion. She was trying to decide whether to enroll us in the fourth grade or simply to declare it skipped. Tell me what you did learn. Willie sat looking out of the window at the playground. I sat looking at Willie. What did you learn? The principal gently repeated. We kept mum. So we had to repeat fourth grade or endure it for the first time. Who cared? Same difference. Willie did master long division. I never figured out how to forget.
Mm-hmm. So, no dependent clauses and no middle ages. What is that?
Traditional curriculum.
Traditional curriculum.
Versus worldly learning.
Dependent clauses and middle ages, or let's say dependent clauses, is something that you can do without for a while. Mm. You know? You got to know how to, you know, you have to be a literate person. But she's thinking they didn't learn anything, and that could not be farther from the truth. Tell me what you did learn. Why aren't they saying anything?
You couldn't even describe what they learned. about life in this year to the teacher.
Right.
Where are you going to start?
Right.
I think they knew it wasn't going to make sense to the teacher anyhow, if they did try. Right. It was way beyond that.
Right. And it's also because, you know, even if they say, you know, we said we went to see a Civil War monument or something like that, first of all, you know, it's a very eclectic education, right? So you can't describe it maybe so the principal understands it. But also, who cares?
Yeah.
Because, mm-hmm. you know, they lost their father. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so whether they have to go through fourth grade or not or again, and this is something Ilana always says, you should never let school get in the way of your education, right? So, and here would be a case where, you know, school really didn't mean very much to their education. It was what they learned at home that was really the schooling that they got.
But illness made, oh, the story comes.
I know, it's, yes. I know, me too.
Illness makes you very sophisticated.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. the children are very sophisticated. On one level, they sound way above their years. And then you learn they had to repeat a grade. Mm-hmm.
But this is in contrast to the mother and the daughter in the previous study, the soup ladle,
right?
Who were also without the father,
okay?
Who were homeschooling in a very difficult way. And even someone says, far be it from me to understand mothers and children's. In this story, we understand mother and children so clearly that it just makes that other example seem just bizarre by comparison. Mm-hmm. I mean, putting the two together is just such a contrast for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But one is inside of a family and the other is outside.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
But what we got at the end of the previous story is the love that this mother and child shared, whereas we got that up front in the story.
Well, this one fills the whole story.
Yeah.
And the other is an observation that comes to it, another observer who didn't see what she was seeing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. And, you know, it feels like, here's a writer who can make you feel like she just performed magic, mm-hmm. right? Because how did she, you know, get us to see these two kids who heartbreakingly love their parents, you know, and are beloved, and their aunt. And again, never said anything, but said it all in what, you know, it really feels like she did magic because, you know, just so, so beautiful. I never figured out how to forget. Right. So, even listen to that sentence. Mm-hmm. I never figured out how to forget. Not like, you know, I was heartbroken for the rest of my life. It was just, I'm not going to forget my father. I'm not going to forget that experience. You know, it's imprinted on the heart for, you know, forever. But just the way we hear her mind saying it tells you that, you know, she's going to be... She has mechanisms for coping, and she will, and they'll go on.
You said you wanted to go back to the title.
So the title, homeschooling. I think it's, you know, this is just the case where, you know, the education that they receive at home and from home, not just at home, but from home, is all so that really matters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, truth be told, you know, we can understand that because that's where our kids get most of their Jewish education, right?
Right.
Or they hopefully are getting a lot of their Jewish education. And that's what really imprints. If all we're giving them is their Jewish education at school, we know that's not gonna, but when it's through the home, these are things you don't forget.
She knows that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
When's our next meeting?
2 weeks from today.
2 weeks.
And then we have one after. I think we have two after. I'm sorry, because I thought on the schedule. I thought you didn't show one on the 4th.
No, we have two more. We have the 11th.
Yeah, no, we don't have the 4th. Right, December 11th. So we're just doing the next two stories. Next two stories. Oh, yes. Just a quick announcement. I'm sorry.